Om Avyayantu Mamangani Vaktanas Chakshushrotramato Falanindriyani Chasarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarot Anirakaranam Asvanirakaranam Astu Tadatmani Nirate Upanishatsu Dharmaste Mai Santu Te Mai Santu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Let's go to a verse, verse 4, in part 4. Ready? Tasya eshaha adeshaha.
Tasya eshaha adeshaha.
Yare tadvidyutaha.
Yare tadvidyutaha.
Vyajut. Vyajutada.
Vyajutada.
Iti it.
Iti it.
Nyam nimishadda.
Nyam nimishadda.
Iti adidaivatam.
Iti adidaivatam.
This long ah has different meanings, but here it has the sense of like meaning it's giving an example is being given. Like a so here it says, Tasya eshaha. Adeshaha. Adesha means now this teaching. Eshaha adeshaha. This teaching, tasya of Brahman. Tasya means tad, of that. Now there's this teaching of that Brahman. So tasya eshaha adeshaha. Yed. Yed etad vidyutaha vyavyutad a. Iti. It says, Tasya eshaha adeshaha yed etad. There is now the teaching of that ear of the ear, which is this, which is, has been under discussion, which is that which is the subject matter of the Upanishad, that Brahman, that Atma, which is Brahman, the ear of the ear, the eye of the eye, the, etc. So here it says, what is the simile, what is the example that they're going to use here? It says, vidyutaha vyadyutad. Vyadyutad means like a flash. So, flash of lightning. So, ah, similar to, or like a flash of lightning, a flash of lightning. How lightning comes and then it pulls back. It goes like that. That's the flash of lightning. So, it is like a flash of lightning. That's the first example. Then it goes, iti, ends that. So the teaching of this Brahman is going to be by example. First example of, it is like a flash of lightning. Okay. The second example, then it says, iti, thus, the first example. Then it, this in is actually it. It means and here, it means cha. And, nyamimishat. Nyamimishat, ah. Ah means like. It is like the blinking of the eye, the closing of the eye, and means what do you call this form? It's not desiderative. Frequentative. it goes over and over. So like the blinking of an eye, like that. The blinking of an eye, your eyes close, you know, close and open. So one is really more the adhidaivika, and the other is more adhyatma, because I'm the one who's blinking. If we look at, in this example, that when a lightning comes, we look at the lightning that comes and goes as one example, and the blinking that takes place in Indra's eyes as the second example, then it's adhidaivita. If it's how in the adhidaiva means all of the laws of Ishwara. Adhidaiva is Ishwara, it is all of the devas, it's all of the laws, right? Adhyatma is everything that is in reference to the jiva. It includes the laws, but it's really from the standpoint of the jiva is adhyatma. Okay? From the standpoint of the devas, or from Ishwara, it's adhidaivita. From the standpoint of all of the Buddhas, all of the Buddhas, the elements and elementals, and all of the things that surround you, that's called adhibhuta, adhibhuta. So here, the Upanishad is more than anything focused on the devatas. And the devatas are all expressions of Ishwara and Ishwara's laws. And so here the whole story itself has to do with the devatas. Swamiji, in his introduction, so I'm going to do a little bit of in this adhidaivita now. Swamiji is in his introduction to actually the chapter 3, is talking about these three that we always say, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. You'll say the first one is, in terms of this Upanishad, is for the adhyatma. It's from the standpoint of the jiva. Then adhibhautam, or bhautika, or adhibhutam. It's from the standpoint of all of the elements that are surrounding you. And then the adhidaivika is from the standpoint of Ishwara himself and of all of the devas that are there as representative of laws. And so when we look at these three standpoints, we're talking really about the manifestation of the Maya Upadhi, the Jagat. The Jagat means everything that exists within time and space, everything that is a manifestation of Maya, Mithya. That is the Jagat. The Jagat, the Adhyatma, my own, the Jiva, is included in the Jagat. Okay. So, but from my standpoint, from the standpoint of the Jiva, I am an individual entity. Even if I say I'm part of Ishwara, I'm still an individual entity within the Jagat. But being within the Jagat and being made of the same materials of the Jagat, of the creation, and being subject to the same laws as everything else in the creation, the laws really are the adhidaivika, being subject to the same laws in the creation, there is a relationship between all three. So, for instance, one thing we'll say is like this. My eyes, or well, let me talk. Start with this. Start with the elements. The liquid inside of me, any liquid inside, is water outside. The adhyatma, for the adhyatmika, it would be any liquid inside is really water with other things mixed in. But it is water. Liquid out, and so that's adhyatmika. Liquid outside is just water. So liquid inside, right? Liquid inside has to do with me. What if I'm dehydrated? That's a problem. I don't have enough water. You know, I don't have enough liquid inside. So that problem of being dehydrated, of not having enough water, would be an adhyatmika problem. It would be a problem that's centered on me in reference to water. What would be centered on the adhibhautika in reference to water? I could say there's a drought. Same problem, but this problem now is adhibhautika, I can say. Adhibhautika. It's a problem that has to do with the element water of the jagat, right? I could say prana. Inside, what is prana, is vayu outside. The air inside, right, is prana. That vital force inside is prana. We can say the prana apana. That is internal. External is the wind, is vayu. And so that both of these, again, are adhyatmika and adhibhautika. Then you can take another one, like the elements inside of me that make up this physical body are the five elements outside that make up the jagat. So the same elements that make up the jagat, the elementals that come from the five elements, are exactly the same elements that are internal that make up this body. And so there is a definite relationship between the internal and the external. It's really the same elements and elementals performing different functions. Some of the functions are located in reference to me, the jiva. Some of the functions are located just in reference generally to the whole creation, to Bhagavan's creation. So then also, there's what we call adhidaivika, which is viewed as all of the laws that keep these relationships going. All of the laws that keep the relationships going, keep the world going, and the world's inclusion of me going. And so that's called the adhidaivika. Each law is viewed as having a devata. Each law represents a devata, or a devata represents each law. So the devata is really just an expression of Ishvara in reference to all of the laws that keep this creation functioning as one living being. You can look at the whole creation, because if you look at the creation as Ishvara, there's two things happening. First, there's the Adhishtana of Ishvara, which is Brahman, which is me, which is conscious being. And then there's the Ishvara's form, right? And included in Ishvara's form, so Ishvara has the same, Adhishtana. Ishvara's total form has the same Adhishtana, which is conscious being, the Satchit, same Adhishtana as everything within Ishvara's form. It's not like Ishvara's form comes and then somehow the jivas don't have the same Adhishtana. That's not possible. So the Adhishtana, the Brahman, the self that I am, is the self of the entire form. And so now that means that this entire form that's manifest is made of the same elements, made of the same sattva, rajas, tamas, right? The same gunas, the same maya, sattva, rajas, and tamas, whether it be the jivas that are included in that projection, or whether it be the nama rupas of the creation itself in which the jivas are moving around. There's no real separation between the jivas, as though they're separate and aren't part of the creation, and the creation. They all belong together. They are all contained in the same set of laws, and they have complementary parts. By that I mean, you have eyes to see forms, color. That means that your eyes are complementary to color. Because you have eyes, you can see color, right? So there's a relationship between eyes and form. Because you have ears, there is sound. So there's a relationship between your ears and the sound that you hear. Because you have a sense of touch, you can feel. So this is a complementarity. You know, it's not like you have eyes but there's nothing to see. They're just kind of bobbling around. They're doing nothing. People go, what are these for? You know, they are part and parcel of the creation. Actually, they make the creation into what you can say, like in the Purusha Suktam, I have 1,000 eyes and I have 1,000 ears and I have infinite number of hands and infinite number of feet. Why? Because all of these are an expression of me as Ishvara. They're all an expression of Ishvara. And they all have a purpose. Everything about the jiva is purposeful, even in terms of its relationship with the creation. And so there's a complementarity between the adhyatma, everything that makes up me, all of my experience, and all of the things that make up the creation which I experience. So subject, object, knower, known, seer, seen, hearer, heard, the sense of touch and the objects of touch, the ability to grasp. There are things to grasp. the ability to move, there are places to move. What if you can move and there's no place to move? You know? So everything works kind of as a whole. So it's easy when you say adibhautika. Adibhautika means everything that the jiva experiences that surrounds you. Everything that surrounds you external to the body is called adibhautika. All of the elements that I come into relationship with. It's called the jagat. Adhyatmika is everything that takes place in me, the one I identify with as this jiva. Everything that affects me or is centered on me. That adi means centered on. Like adhikarana. The adhikarana is the place where something takes place. Right? So the adhikarana is whatever is the adhikarana is what is the central to the experiences that I'm having. So your physical body would be the adhyatmika experiences would be, for instance, if your body, you know, if something is happening to your body, if something is happening to your sense organs, if something that is concerning your mind, if something concerning any of the upadis. Also, even in self-knowledge, my gaining of self-knowledge, you know, how does that take place for me, the jiva? That's adhyatmika. Now, in the story really is how does self-knowledge take place for the devas? How does that happen? You know, but then the devas are also jivas. Nevertheless, the adidaivika is being pointed to. The adhikarana in the story are the devatas. You know, and the devatas are what? They're each one of them is responsible for a given law that handles that particular aspect of the creation. So Vayu is a jiva, an exalted jiva, who has a predominantly sattva antakarana, sattva shuddhi. It has a lot of shuddhi, impurity in the antakarana. And so like Ramana, they'll say that the deva just, if that mumukshutvam rises in the devata, all they need is exposure to the teaching. That's all they need. Swamiji will say, that's all you need too. If you have that antakarana shuddhi that they have because of the punya that allowed them to take that exalted body, they have a tremendous antakarana shuddhi. And so really this knowledge just has to be revealed once. It has to be told. But it does have to be told. There needs to be a pramana. That's why in this story, this adidaivika story, the ajnanam of the devatas was initially pointed out because of their taking responsibility for the winning of Brahman's victory. You know? Because they're exalted beings, and because of them in the war, they were the successful ones who won the war. But they didn't understand, they didn't have that knowledge that from the standpoint of their self, the self is Brahman. The self is Brahman is the self of all beings as well as the asuras. The self of the devatas and the self of the asuras are just one self. The self of the yaksha, the self of Uma, you know, the self of Ishwara, just one self. That was not understood. Also, what was not understood is that every capacity that they have and all the karma pullas, who is responsible for that? That's what we call Ishwara. Ishwara, the maya that expresses the maya that expresses as the jagat, that includes all of the jivas, all of those capacities belong to Ishwara. And why does this jiva get certain capacities, and this jiva gets certain capacities, and this jiva is exalted as a devata, and this jiva is a mumukshu on this plane? Why is that? That's all Bhagawan. Bhagawan said in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, you perform your karmas, you do your dharma, you perform your karmas, but always know that I am the karma paladatta. I am the one who gives the fruits of the action. I am the one who gives the fruits of your karma. You do the karmas. You follow your dharma. But know that I am the karma paladatta. I am the one because of whom you get these various fruits. You can go farther. You perform these actions, whatever actions may be there to be formed. You perform your dharma. But what gives you the shakti to be able to perform the action? What gives you the physical form to be able to exist in this creation? Whose form is this really? From whom does this form come? Say this form comes, you can say, because of the manifestation of my prior karmas. Bhagavan gives me this form. Where do the karmas come from? You know, all of them really, when you analyze it, every single thing about you, including every desire, in fact. If you remember, just even in terms of the taking this particular body, you can say that you took this body and you go through your whole life because of the prarabdha karma. And how does the prarabdha karma manifest? How does it manifest? It manifests as anyecha, someone else's desire. They have a desire for something, and you're included in that. You need to do something for them, and so their desire drags you into that next activity that unveils itself as part of your karma. Or, you know, there's some adibhautikam, there's some big thing that's happening in the world that drags you in. You know? Or adidaivikam, there are things that Bhagavan himself creates in terms of what's happening in the creation. And that also pulls you in. But there's also what we call swecha, your own desire. Your own desire. Why do you have this particular desire? Why is this desire rising? That's actually something wonderful as you gain knowledge. The desires that arise are not out of ignorance. You know, it's not that this desire is rising up in me because I want this to be so that I can be happy. As though an agnani, I want this because my happy, if I could have this only, then will I be happy. Or if I could just have this. And why do I think that way? Well, because, you know, the Joneses over here have that, and they seem to be happy. Or I see somebody, a wonderful musician, and you think, oh, if I could only play like that, or I could only sing like they do, I would be so happy. And so from our experiences in the world, we often pick up desires that really have nothing to do with us or nothing to do with our karma. So those are the kind of desires that, as you gain knowledge, these kind of desires drop off. Because they don't belong to you. They don't belong to your prarabdha. They come into your mind, and you kind of take them seriously for a while, but they drop off. There's nothing really helping you in terms of that thing manifesting. But then there's the desire swecha, your own desires that rise up. And they rise up, and the whole universe is in harmony with those desires. Because they're Bhagavan's desires. They're not Jiva Srishti. Jiva Srishti means that these desires came now because you saw something that seemed like that might make me happy, or if I could do that, that might make me happy. But there's really no juice there. There's nobody really cooperating, you know. And you don't even really cooperate. You know, it comes, you stick with it for a while, and it drops off because it's just not you. But the desires that are true to your prarabdha karma, they don't drop off, nor do they seem odd or foreign to you. They come into manifestation, they rise up out of the prarabdha karma, and then that's what you're going to do. That's what you want to do, that's what you're going to do, that's just the next thing. You barely even notice it, actually, because it's not a foreign element. You know? So all of this prarabdha karma is fine. That moves you, all the different types of Icha, all the different types of desires that kind of move you through the life, they're in a sense unnoticeable because they're so obvious to you. I mean, they happen. The whole universe supports them. They're all Ishwara. They belong to Ishwara. Yeah. That you have Jiva Srishti, that your mind is able to imagine and to project. You know, and that you have an unconscious filled with all kinds of stuff. That the unconscious is there, that's Ishwara Srishti. It's filled up with Jiva Srishti. All of the events that have happened to you, the way you've responded to them, that's all Jiva Srishti. But Jiva Srishti belongs to Ishwara Srishti. Otherwise, Jiva Srishti, you know, the Jiva Srishti means all the creations, the pratibhasika, the subjective imaginations and creations, subjective desires, subjective projections, all of these things exist. So we should have a Pratibhasika Devata, you know. Who's responsible? Who's responsible for allowing all of this, this imaginal world of the jiva? We'd say that's the, you know, jiva srishti devata. Because there's laws for it. If there were no laws for it, it wouldn't exist. There would be no place for it. You have to look at the laws. If Swamiji will say, and also just accept it in the tradition, you know, if you think of every law as a devata, I mean, this whole creation is just a warp and woof, you know, like a tapestry of devatas. There's no place where there's not a devata because there's no place where there's not a law. And those laws that we can say are represented by an infinite number of devatas, you could also say that infinite number of devatas are an infinite number of dharmas. So it's like the warp and woof of the creation, the bones of the creation, so to speak, is what we call dharma. But that dharma enjoys consciousness. And so when we say dharma, then we have to recognize consciousness because the dharma itself, Ishvara himself, is mitya. It's mitya because there's nothing about Ishvara or this creation from the standpoint of the laws, from the adidaivika, from the laws. There's nothing separate from consciousness. Ishvara is maya, which has its being only in me, in conscious being, in Brahman. And so this maya has no independent being, even in unmanifest condition. It has no independent being. So when the maya manifests, that's as though Brahman yourself, just to bring it more near, Brahman yourself without any type of change, because vivarta upadana karana, the Brahman, my being, me, without going through any type of change, manifests into this creation. But Brahman is non-dual. It doesn't have any limbs. You know, it doesn't have a mind. It doesn't have sense organs for it to manifest in this creation. And it doesn't. It's vivarta. It stays exactly the same. But maya belongs to Brahman. Even though maya belongs to Brahman, it doesn't make Brahman too, like maya, like Brahman plus maya. Because as we analyze maya, the sattva, rajas, and tamas, it itself has no being. Its being is me. Like you can understand the beauty of this, even just in reference to your imagination. You have, as a jiva, you have, for your Ishvara Srishti, you have maya. You have this wonderful maya that you can use in so many positive ways, and it can also overwhelm you. But this maya projects all kinds of things. It can project, you know, it can project art. It can project fantastic imaginations. You can use it for healing. You can use this power, this capacity in so many ways that are so powerful. But you use it and you withdraw it. And when you're using it, it's not like you go away. Say you have an active imagination. It's not like you're lost in that imagination. And how do I get myself back? All the while, you're there as the adhishtana of the imagination. But the imagination itself follows really certain laws. Certain laws. Like you imagine, your imagination takes place using the five elements. It takes place using sattva, rajas, and tamas. It has the jivas inside, which take on all kinds of forms. Like you could have, you know, you could have a human body with a lion's head and claws, like they have in all mythology. But you know what all of these things are. You're just putting them together differently, and you have the freedom to do that. You know, but what you're doing is there in the laws of Ishvara to be done. And the one who is the Adhishtana never moves at all. So the Adhishtana, that is me, in reference to my imagination, projects a universe which has what for its Adhishtana? Me, in imagination. Only me. So this is actually, you know, the nature of the universe. There's two things to recognize in the nature of the universe and in the nature of your projection and in the nature of all experience. There's no exception. For all experience, there is an adhishtana, which is me, conscious being, that is the invariable, it's the material cause of everything, the isness, the knownness. You can't get away from that. It doesn't have time or space. Time and space is part of the projection, part of the jagat. But the invariable me is something that is never not there. And what else is never not there in terms of experience is the object of experience. And the object of experience isn't just one thing hanging there, you know. Like, let's experience an apple. So that would take a lot of concentration, actually, you can do it, but to just to focus, you can focus on an imaginary apple and not see anything else but the apple. That's a trick in yoga. That's something that we can actually accomplish in yoga. But just talking in a normal way, you know, I am the Satchit, the conscious being, not as an object, but the conscious being, not as an object, because I can't be an object. I can't. How can I be an object? I am known because I am consciousness, but I'm not available for subject-object differentiation. That has to all take place in the creation, and it does take place in the creation, but when we look at it, what is this that's taking place? What is this? You know, we say, this is Ishvara. Everything we experience, all of the this, is Ishvara. And who is Ishvara? Well, Ishvara is, you can say, on one level, Ishvara is Brahman. Ishvara is Brahman because the whole Ishvara Upadhi, infinite as it is, if it is Ishvara, conscious being, the conscious being is only one. There's not a conscious being walking around in Ishvara as conscious existence walking around. There's only one conscious being. And the whole infinite creation enjoys that one conscious being. In other words, anything in this creation exists and it is known. So that is Brahman. It is and it is known. The isness is not objectifiable. The knownness, the consciousness, is not objectifiable. What is objectifiable is only what is known, the objects, the nama-rupas. And the nama-rupas include all of this that's objectifiable. The nama-rupas then themselves include that which is seen, the seer and the seen, the hearer and the heard. Right? For Ishvara, it's all recognized just as an infinite thought. Because the whole Upadhi, it has sattva, rajas, and tamas. So just because the whole thing is known. But how can it be known? What is the knownness that it enjoys? Is only Brahman. The knownness, the consciousness itself, is not an object within the creation. But the whole creation has no being apart from that isness and knownness. So that means that this creation is a conscious being, because Maya cannot be away from the Adhishtana. It can't be away from that which actually is. And that means that anything that comes into being or goes out of being must depend on the Adhishtana for its isness. And the isness is knownness, knownness is isness. The isness, the being, is self-evident. And the being, this being, which is the very being that gives the creation its isness, and knownness, from the standpoint of Ishvara, is the very being that gives me my isness and knownness. That's why we say Brahman yourself. It's not big or small. It would have to be an object in the creation. But I am and I am known. So the better language to use, I am a conscious being. My being, I am, I exist, and I am consciousness. Because everything shines after me, every experience that I have. Now, what will Brahman say? What will Ishvara say? I am consciousness. Why? Because consciousness is not an object in the creation. It's a different order of reality. So that different order of reality is the truth, is the Satchit that Maya enjoys. So Maya itself, this projection of Maya, has me as its upadana karana, has consciousness as its material cause that undergoes no change. And it has Maya as its material cause for that which does undergo change. Because how does this creation manifest? It manifests as infinite names and forms. It manifests in the form of this infinite creation, which needs to be analyzed. And so you can analyze it in terms of its laws, focusing on the what we call adidaivikam. We can focus on all of the nama-rupas that we experience, all of the elements and the elementals. Now we're focusing on this physical creation itself that I find myself in. That'd be adibhautikam. And then sometimes we focus on this upadhi itself. That would be adhyatmika. I'm focusing on myself. So in terms of an Upanishad, we have to focus on all of these things. We have to bring in all of the laws. We have to bring in all of the elements. And we have to bring in this upadhi also. Into what? Into the recognition that all of this really has no being or existence or knownness at all apart from Brahman. And so in this particular, and all are, of course, completely interconnected, and all three are completely interconnected and related, because when the creation comes into manifestation, it comes into manifestation with all these things. The laws are there, you know, the laws are there, the nama-rupas, the elements are all there, and the jiva is there. So when we analyze this creation, these are the three things that we have to be very clear on. I have to know who I am. I have to know what the jagat, so adhyatmika. This knowledge has to be centered on me. Then adibhautika, it has to be centered on this physical creation. And then adidaivika, it has to be centered on all of the devatas, all of the laws, Ishwara. So in all cases, where does it all resolve? Where does the whole thing resolve, you know? The devatas, you know, from the standpoint of the devatas, which we're doing in this particular story, what they have to recognize, you know, they have to know that this body, there's two things here. They have to know that their upadhi, the devata upadhi, the exalted upadhi, you know, is part and parcel of Ishwara. You can even say the devata upadhi is Ishwara. Ishwara is totally responsible for every part of it. So what part of the devata upadhi, like of Indra and Vayu and Agni, what part of their upadhi is not Ishwara, is separate from Ishwara? Because there is no part of the upadhi that is separate from Ishwara, and there is no, therefore, no karma, no activity that's separate from Ishwara, and there's no karmapala that's separate from Ishwara because of the laws, then who is a devata? You can say the devata is Ishwara. But the devata is only a form, an exalted form. It's an exalted jiva. How can you say it's Ishwara? Well, it's kind of like saying, you know, all of the cells in this body are part of me. You know? They're not separate from me. There's nothing about your heart or your liver or your lungs, you know, or all of the things that are so important in making this body function. But you could go from a fingernail to, you know, to your heart, to your brain, to the cells in the body. It's infinitely divisible, but all of these make up my body. There is not one thing in the body that is not me, you know. And so by talking about a part of the body, I'm talking about me. Even though I'm very aware that it's a part of the body, there's nothing about it that is separate from me. So in terms of the devatas, they have to realize that this manifestation, you know, this exalted manifestation, every single part of it, including my being able to get this, is the karmapala, this entire manifestation is nothing but Ishwara. I am only Ishwara, and you are only Ishwara, and you are only Ishwara. But then Ishwara goes on changing. So really, who is Ishwara? Because if you focus on anything as Ishwara, that thing comes into being and goes out of being, you know, which was shown when Indra, the third, the one who is really the devata of the mind, approaches, when he approaches the yaksha, because Brahman is setting this all up, Ishwara is setting this all up so that he can be taught. When he approaches the yaksha, he wants to know who the yaksha is. As he approaches, it just disappears. So that yaksha stands for really any form. Any form disappears. Any form moves away. It comes into existence and goes out of existence at some time. Any experience, including swargaloka, including taking the form of a devata, even though that will last for a really long time, say it lasts for 400, 500,000 years or even a million years, the responsibility of and the punya of having that devata form that never gets old, never wants for anything and is responsible, has so much power, has a sattva buddhi, so is always kind of enjoying an ananda, a well-beingness. So that devata, wonderful upadhi to have, I suppose. Only until you only have 3 or 4 days left. Mm-hmm. Somebody always joke, say you've lived for, you get a really long devata life. And when you first start out, it seems like it's infinite. There's no such thing as losing this sthanam, this very sacred sthanam, place, position. But then at the end of the kalpa, you go back to being a jiva, unless you've gained self-knowledge. The devas don't have self-knowledge unless they inquire. And if they inquire, then they want to know. And then just for like the jivas here, if you want to know, then the laws are that you will gain this knowledge. You will gain the pramana that is necessary. So to want to know, there has to be a certain, and this is again in the story, to want to know, there has to be a certain humility that takes place. And that humility has to do with the recognition that there's no way I can know. It's kind of a recognition that there must be, I hope there must be, some sort of liberation or some sort of completion where I can say everything that needs to be done has been done, or some way of knowing myself. But I can come to the recognition that that is not possible based upon the pramanas I have and the nature of the creation. I can come upon that, and then I want to know. Then your buddhi becomes a seeker. And when the buddhi becomes a seeker for this knowledge, then as the laws would have it, Ishwara's laws, as part of the Ishwara upadhi, then as you become a mumukshu, that pramana has to avail itself to you. Otherwise, Bhagavan would just may have made it stuck on you somewhere. You have to keep dusting it off, you know, as the lifetimes go on, until that mumukshu twam arises, and then that pramana has to come. And so in this story, you know, the Agni and Vayu weren't quite there. They approached the yaksha, but all they really wanted to know is, you know, who are you? What's your name? What responsibilities do you have? We haven't met you before, you know. But Indra, his inquiry was a little different. He wanted to know who really was that yaksha. Who was inside that yaksha? What is the swarupa? What is the nature of that yaksha? You know? And wanting to know that, that's the mumukshutvam, wanting to know who are you really? What is underneath this form, you know? Wanting to know that, as he approached the yaksha, the form went away. And then he was just left. There's no way that his eyes or his sense organs can actually know who that yaksha is. The yaksha just disappeared. And so he just stood there with some shraddha waiting. Because if the yaksha just disappeared on him, he didn't disappear. The yaksha didn't disappear on Agni or Vayu. He disappeared on Indra, who is really, interestingly, the devata of the mind. And the king of all of the devatas, but the ruler of the mind. But even the mind, without a pramana, the mind can get this knowledge, but not without a pramana. The sense organs or the karmendriyas, like Agni represents speech, for instance, the sense organs and the karmendriyas, there's nothing they can do to get this knowledge. And all they can do is really respond to this world, you know. They can be useful, like your eyes can kind of get you to the class because you have to drive and you need eyes to drive, and they can get you to your seat and all of that. You know, and the ears can hear, but what they have to hear now is a pramana. They have to be, the ears have to be exposed to a pramana, the shabda pramana that takes place through the ears. But the ears themselves were just hearing sounds. They're helpless also. But now Indra, being the lord of the mind itself, when Indra comes and he wants to know, you know, who is the yaksha? Who are you? Who are you? Why have you appeared? Who are you? You know, really, who are you? What is your swarupa? What is your nature? And so as he approaches, the yaksha, Brahman in the form of the yaksha disappears. And then Brahman arises again as Uma. Uma is the Brahmavidya. And that Brahmavidya then is in the form of this luminous, beautiful woman who is all golden, all self-evident, and a self-effulgent and all golden. If you take him of the Haimavati as the one who is irradiating gold, or just Uma is the daughter of Himavan, the lord of the Himalayas, the Devata. She's there, you know. And then he asks to her, to Brahmavidya, to his guru, to his teacher, the one who is Brahmavidya, who is that yaksha? Who was that? What was their nature? Who are they? Because as Indra, I know all of the devatas. I know all of the namarupas. So who is this? This one that has just appeared. And then Uma teaches him. She gives Brahmavidya. And then he recognizes Brahman. Brahman is the one who, as Ishwara, appeared as the yaksha, and Brahman is the one who is now appearing as Uma, and Brahman is the one who is the self. And so, with that teaching, very very terse for us, but with that teaching, then what happened is then Indra was satisfied. He knew. And then he went back and he taught Agni and Vayu, and they taught the other devatas. So all, but the thing is, there's a couple of things to know. One is, who is the swarupa of the yaksha? I have to recognize that the swarupa of the yaksha, the swarupa, the nature of the yaksha, the nature of the devatas, the nature of Ishwara, the nature of all of the Agni, Vayu, you know, and Indra, the swarupa of all beings, I have to recognize as myself, as that the adhishtana of all beings. I have to recognize that this self is the adhishtana of all beings. If I don't recognize myself as the adhishtana of all beings, then you know very little, if you remember that verse. If you just think of yourself recognizing Brahman only as your innermost pratyagatma, so you then are Brahman, just you are Brahman, then you know very, very little. You have to be able to recognize this Brahman as the adhishtana of all beings. And then what else do I need to recognize? That the maya, which is intrinsic, like an incidental attribute of the self, projects in the form of this universe, right? And is one, and the consciousness of this universe is only one satchit. And this universe, because of the universe is a projection of maya, which is mithya, that has me as its being. So a lot of stuff to recognize. And so in the record, with understanding this, that all of the jivas, all of the bhautikas, all of the objects, all that we experience is maya, is the mithya maya, which is Ishwara. Mithya has no being at all apart from Brahman. So really, that's why we can also say this entire creation is Brahman. You know, I can also say this entire creation is Ishwara, because there is no Ishwara apart from Brahman. You can't have mithya apart from Brahman. So this, you can say this entire creation is Brahman, because Brahman is what is actually here. Or you can say this entire creation is Ishwara, because when I say Ishwara, it's Brahman plus this Maya Upadhi. And so that means that you are Brahman, you are Brahman, you are Brahman. All of the laws are Brahman. You know, the whole is Brahman. Everything within the whole is Brahman. All of the Namarupas are Brahman. There is nothing that is not Brahman. But that Brahman is not an object walking around in the world. Brahman is the self that is me, which is the self that is you, which is the self that is Ishwara. That's what we have to end up seeing. And how do we see that? So, how do we see it? Well, we don't see it. We don't see it. We have to recognize it as the mind of the mind, and the ear of the ear, and the eye of the eye. Why do we say like that? Because the adhishtana is never away from the object. It's never away from the seer. It's never away from the seen. There's no distance. And so we tend to think that Atma, limitless Atma, you know, has to be realized. It actually doesn't have to be realized, because the realization in terms of experientially, it's already here as me. So myself is self-evident. So I don't have to reach it to realize, is what I mean. I don't have to reach it to realize. I have to recognize it. But the recognition also requires a lot of knowledge, because I can't just recognize it as the one abiding, the conscious being abiding in this upadhi. I have to be able to recognize it also, you know, as the self that is abiding in all upadhis. I have to recognize it as the self that is the very self of Ishwara. But the self that I'm talking about is the self that is already me and already completely self-evident. Even for an Ajnani, you are self-evident. You take yourself completely for granted. The problem is that it's superimposed upon the upadhis. But the self-experience is self-evident. And it's the same when you gain knowledge. It's just that, this is me. It has always been me. It will never not be me. I've always known this. This has always been me. It's no big awakening. What I recognize is that this me that has always been me, that is the one who's present in everything that I see, the me that because of whom all sight takes place, the me because of whom the mind takes place, when I recognize that in reference to this Maya Upadhi, I recognize that myself is the self in all beings, that myself is the self of Ishwar, that myself itself is non-dual, that I'm a different order of reality, that nothing can touch me. And once these things are said, they're all immediately verified by my experience. So I say it's a means of knowledge that is immediately verified by my experience. If you say eye of the eye, ear of the ear, mind of the mind, you just have to be just be awake to the thought that you're having. You know, it's not that you're the mind of the mind. You're the one who embodies the thought. You're the one as such chit, as conscious being. You are the one there, present to the thought. And that same one is present to your ears. This very same one is present to your eyes, present to this upadhi, present to every vritti that you have. So once this is pointed out, all you have to do, if they're functioning as a pramana, these words are just landing on the fact of it. Because you can't say, no, that's not true. That is true. It's exactly your experience. And you have questions about it. That's what we do manana. There's questions about it. Those questions have to be dealt with. Okay. So this, anyway, I've kind of circled around these terms, adidaivika and adibhautika and adhyatmika, because they're important to the Upanishad, and Swamiji spent a lot of time on these understandings, because they're just the three aspects in terms of our creation, in terms of our experience. There's me, the individual, the jiva. There's the jagat, the universe. The manifestation of this creation is called the jagat. So the jiva, the jagat, and then there's Ishwara. Jiva, jagat, Ishwara. So I have to understand this knowledge from all three of these vantage points, in reference to myself, in reference to this universe, in reference to all of the laws, Ishwara. All of these things have to be clear in order for that nishta to be there. This Upanishad is more focused really on the Adidaivaka. But as you'll see as we go into these few verses now, it's first going to do the Adidaivaka, then the Adhyatma. Very nice. Om
Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.